Gonna make it a birthday.
Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and not that of WVRC Media, its staff and management, or the distributors of this podcast.
Welcome to the Scoop Squad Truth Squad with Jenny
and Ashley, and we're here serving up the latest scoop from Charleston, West Virginia, where crime is at a seven-year low. Can I go on?
Yes.
Where crime is at a seven-year low. There are fewer homeless on the streets of Charleston in more than a decade, and where your dog can't poop on the street, but people can. So,
oh my God.
There's nothing like stepping in human feces.
Whew. Hey, Morgan.
Hi.
Morgan Switzer's here with
us
today.
We're the poop squad. Some people are going to figure that out at some point.
That's
and be
funny.
Like, she's a poop. They're the poop squad.
The poop squad. Scoop squad.
Oh, you said poop.
Ooh, Andrew Schneider's watching. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Andrew.
He's with
All right, so Jenny, we
just had a birthday, too. So I just want to give
birthday.
A quick shout out to Andrew Schneider, whose birthday was yesterday on West Virginia Day, and he is with Fairness West Virginia.
Happy birthday, Andrew.
There you go. Thanks.
All right, Jenny, tell us what we're doing today.
So we've asked Morgan to come back on. She's delightful, first and foremost. She has an open invitation. And
nice.
Because her mom is she's owner
got,
of the podcast.
Yes. And she does have an open invitation to come on, but our conversation was great the last time she was on, and I think you were on episode 5. So this is episode 8.
I think it was 6.
And Janine is on again.
Hey,
today.
Councilwoman Faugray.
The last time she was on, we had a great conversation, but in, again, the source of all news, Facebook, there's very often, I will get on myself too and share my experience about what's happened in my personal community and or my neighborhood and with the issues in crime. And so we brought her back to talk about, from a former prosecutor's point of view, mm-hmm. Just maybe some process issues, or not even issues, just process of what happens. And there's accusations that the police, or assumptions, well, the police can't do anything, or they're not doing enough, or the magistrates aren't doing enough, or blah, 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 blah. So we want to get the scoop.
Okay.
All right. So where do we want to start?
So Morgan, I'm running for Charleston City Council, as you know.
Ward 14.
Know
and I'm in your ward, so you better vote for me.
I am.
But
in my
talks with people.
Ward 14.
Around town. And I just had this conversation yesterday with someone about when the police are called on a homeless person.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would say criminal vagrant, a person
right.
that doesn't have a home that is actually participating in criminal activity.
Mm-hmm.
The police will say there's really not a lot we can do, or people will call the mayor's office and the mayor's office may say, well, if the police arrest them, they'll go to jail, but then the magistrates let them out. So it almost looks like blame is shifted a whole lot.
Uh-huh.
And as just someone who isn't familiar with the legal system, as most of Charleston isn't, probably, I think that the more people know about how the system works and who's responsible for what, the more power that people have to be able to make sure that the people they elect to office are doing their job and are working for them. So uh-huh. I think the more that we know, as just normal citizens, the more we can hold our people accountable. So why don't you break it down to us as far as what happens in this process?
Well, I think that the key word that you mentioned there is system, right? Legal system, criminal justice system. It's a system. It's not just one entity like the police department or, you mentioned the mayor. It's a system of people or entities that function together to serve a purpose. And when you talk about, the process of an arrest taking someone before a magistrate. That's a process that we study in law school. That's a process that the police study and come to know very well. And so what happens is, not just in the situation of a homeless person or anybody that commits mm-hmm. a crime or that's alleged to have committed a crime, or, you know, a call comes in 911, the police respond. If the police believe that there is a crime that's been committed, they can take that person forthwith before a magistrate, fill out a criminal complaint. It has to reach a threshold of probable cause that person has violated the state or municipal code and broken the law. So then what happens is they take that person in front of a magistrate. And this is where people say, I've seen it, I've heard it a million times, you know, well, these people get arrested and we arrest people for crime and then the magistrates just let them out. The magistrates just let them out, or the prosecutor doesn't keep them in there, so on and so forth. Well, you know, there are cases that have been decided and there are certain standards that we practice by that govern bond or bail is what people call that. Mm-hmm. And when someone is taken before a magistrate, the magistrate reviews the case and sets what's called a reasonable bail. That's a requirement under the law. And a reasonable bail can be, is decided by that magistrate viewing the circumstances broadly, right? All of the circumstances are viewed on a case-by-case basis. So that's when you have to look at something or look at the cases and see, you know, whether or not they're a misdemeanor or felony offense. Misdemeanors are punishable by up to a year in jail. Felonies are punishable by over a year in jail. They're generally the more severe crimes. But I don't ever like to say that, because domestic violence is domestic battery and domestic assault. They're misdemeanor offenses. But I think those are some of the most serious cases that we can prosecute. And those all happen in magistrate court. So those are misdemeanor offenses. So I say that all of that to say, usually misdemeanor offenses don't get an extremely high bond. A lot of those are PR'd. And there was a new law that was just passed that sets forth several different standards that a magistrate has to look at. And a lot of those are dictate that the magistrate must give a PR bond unless certain circumstances exist. So a PR bond is a personal recognizance bond, okay. Meaning that person does not have to put up any cash at that time. And that person is saying, I will appear at my court date. I won't flee. I'm going to face these charges and appear in court. And then if they don't, that personal recognizance bond is then revoked and they would have to post a cash bail before they get out of jail. So they would go into custody at that point. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for misdemeanor offenses or for the less serious offenses, which can be usually those offenses that are related to people that are living in the streets mm-hmm. or on the streets, trespassing.
Public nudity, public defecation, intoxication.
Things like that. Those are misdemeanor offenses that usually do not get high bonds, if they get bonds.
Well, I was going to say, they're arrestable offenses. Is that correct?
The ones that you just said, public nudity. Yes.
Public nudity, indecent exposure, yes. All of those mm-hmm. are arrestable offenses. Okay.
Yes. They absolutely are. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So does it matter? So if a criminal transient commits one of these arrestable offenses and gets taken into custody by the police, right? Mm-hmm. Then he goes straight to the magistrate. Does it matter how many times this person has been arrested?
If they go to a magistrate?
Yes.
No. You have the constitutional right to be seen within a reasonable time. You are to be taken forthwith mm-hmm. to before a neutral and detached magistrate. So that is a requirement that cannot be
okay. Why
skirted.
Do we keep hearing that that the magistrates just let these people back out on the streets?
Well, because of what I just said, right? They can decide the bail or bond. The magistrates are the people that initially set the bail or bond on these cases. And when I say these cases, I mean felony cases and misdemeanor okay. cases in situations where they're not indicted or something that we refer to as a direct indictment. Mm-hmm. That would be sort of circumventing the magistrate and going straight to the circuit judge, but that doesn't happen. I guess it happens pretty often. But the magistrate sets the bond.
Okay.
First of all,
mm-hmm.
And you know, depending on what the circumstances are in the cases, you know, sometimes their hands are kind of tied because you don't want to, you have to put a reasonable bond on this person. That's a requirement. They have to have a reasonable bond. Well, then that comes into, you know, what's a reasonable bond?
Right.
Well, that's a question that's very debated by prosecutors and defense attorneys at the bar, right there at the bench. Mm-hmm. One of the arguments you could make is this person has, as a prosecutor, as a state, would be this person has a criminal history, right? This person has a long criminal history.
What if the person
But oftentimes we're not there when they set the bond, unless, you know, the prosecutor can be there, but sometimes, you know, it's in the middle of the night or it's, mm-hmm. you know, we don't have the opportunity to be there. Then we have what's called a bond hearing within 5 days. Then both parties are there. So the defense attorney, so when the bond's initially set, a lot of times we're not there.
Right.
Nobody's there. And then the defense attorney will get appointed. The prosecutor gets the case. We come before the magistrate to review the bond again. And that's when the prosecutor would make the argument, hey, these facts are particularly egregious in this case. There were kids around, whatever it is. You know, this person has, it's repeated conduct. They have another pending charge. You know, you should make this bond higher because it's this higher bond, mm-hmm. even though this is a misdemeanor case, mm-hmm. this higher bond is reasonable in this case because of A, B, and C. The defense attorney would say, well, it's a misdemeanor. You know, this person doesn't have a home.
What if the person was obviously mentally under a psychosis of some, you know, a psychosis of some sort, whether it's drug-induced or mm-hmm. Just, you know, mental issues. What does something different happen then?
No, because, I mean, at the outset, how do we gauge that, you mm-hmm. know, other than our own, or when I say our, I mean the police. The police can look at that and see indicators and things that they're trained to see with the naked eye. You know, this person's under the influence or this person's not acting, mm-hmm. you know, not acting safely mm-hmm. or could mm-hmm. be a danger to himself or others. You know, that those cases arise a lot, and a lot of that is due to the drug crisis. Mm-hmm. You know, we see that a lot, and the mental health problem that we have not only in West Virginia but in this country. I used to tell victims all the time, you know, when their loved ones were suffering with mental issues and it was causing them to behave in a certain way, I'd say, well, you know, this is where the mental health system and the criminal justice system converge, and
right.
we don't have a good answer.
Right, right.
You know?
Well, thanks for that first scoop of truth, Morgan. And you guys out there, take a break. We're going to take a break and come back and talk to Morgan and serve up a second scoop.
Brought to you in part by Quinn Computers. With many of us working from home, connectivity is more important than ever. Let Quinn Computers in Spring Hill take care of all your computer challenges. Computer and laptop services, all brands. Network troubleshooting and repair. Wireless network VPN installation and support. Security and firewall installation and support. Backup and recovery service, remote system administration, and more at quinntechnology.com. The Scoop Squad is also brought to you in part by Geraniums Boutique at 1011 Bridge Road, shopgeraniums.com, and by T Graphics. Now let's get back to the show.
Welcome back to the Scoop Squad, Truth Squad. And I'm sitting here thinking, shit.
It's a lot.
See,
it was
even,
like
hey,
so,
Jen.
It was like so deep down in the weeds I couldn't even see over top. But this is great information.
But that's the thing about it. There's so much, like, there's so much about the legal system that you honestly.
Well, yeah, you got it. I think that maybe you should have to have a law degree.
Do you have to go to law school for that?
I don't know. But I'm telling you, I think we need a sponsorship from a weed whacker company because this is like really
am I blabbering?
No, not at all.
Information.
Yeah, it's real. No, you're not blabbering. I'm just sitting here. And today, you know, Ashley and I were talking about her conversation at the pool. And I was talking about today just at the house. There was just so many. I mean, I started my day with people yelling at me that they own the street and stuff. So really, when you call the police over the stuff, it's not really illegal to yell at somebody and tell you, mm-hmm. hey, you know, I am the straight hair. It's just a nuisance. And things like public nudity and things like, you know, just being a harasser in the whole scheme of things is probably, you know, it's just harassment. Mm. And
well, your experience today was just harassment. There are experiences that people have had that these people are committing criminal activities on the streets.
Well, harassment is still a crime.
Yeah, and children are being excited, but
there's a threshold for you.
Right, and
just then screaming at you one time probably doesn't get it. But
Well, they also, what I takeaway and I want to ask you about is, so the bail is set to a reasonable level, and that is at the discretion of a magistrate. Mm-hmm. And if you've got somebody who is obviously unemployed, mm-hmm. or, you know,
that you may not even be present for the bail. Is that correct, Morgan?
The initial bail hearing. The initial bail set. Yes. When somebody's brought in initially. So you are to be taken forthwith to a magistrate. So you have to be taken pretty immediately in front of a magistrate. It can have a delay of a couple of hours, but anything past that has been held or ruled to be an unreasonable amount of time to delay that. So when somebody's arrested, you take them before the magistrate. The magistrate reviews the case, listens to the facts, reads the criminal complaint, sometimes has access to their criminal history, and then sets the bail. That can get reviewed on, you know, in a couple days if that person doesn't make it. The problem is
If
the person doesn't make the bail, it gets reviewed. Sometimes it can get raised. Sometimes it can get lowered. Sometimes the prosecutor moves to revoke that bond.
One more question. Mm-hmm. Can the person be released in that initial bond hearing?
Yeah.
Okay. So absolutely. The person can be just...
They can either post bail there immediately, mm-hmm. or they can get released on their own personal recognizance.
With the agreement that they'll come back.
Yeah. They have to sign bond paperwork, which says, I will not commit any further criminal activity.
I just wonder how often, or be engaged in criminal activity. A criminal transient or a homeless person would come before a magistrate, right? Mm-hmm. When you guys aren't on duty, have the magistrate review the case, and then the person perhaps post bond, right? And then is released, but then never comes back.
A lot.
To the next.
My experience is really we always find that person. Mm-hmm. There's a couple that actually come to mind. But also, I'll say this. There are a lot of different cases that police see and that the prosecutor's offices statewide, nationwide see. And a lot of times we don't necessarily look at, we look at the lethality of the case. Is this person dangerous? Is this person going to commit another crime? Is this person going to cause harm to the public, mm-hmm. or somebody else? Those are the ones that really raise your red flags. Those mm-hmm. are the ones that get your attention. Like I said, domestic violence cases, you see, I was there long enough to know that if I saw somebody's record, or if I saw a particular fact pattern, or if I saw, you know, I could pretty much, without knowing a whole lot about the case, see the indicators that say you need to make sure that this person has a high bond, mm-hmm. or stays in jail, because mm-hmm. this person is dangerous and will hurt someone. You know, if you've got somebody that's reoffending in these misdemeanor offenses, yes, it's a nuisance and it's a problem. But is that somebody that I'm going to fight for a really high bond on, mm-hmm. as a prosecutor? I can tell you in a lot of cases I didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're talking about a fact pattern that's bothersome, like nudity or destruction of property, that's harming somebody. You know, mm-hmm. those are the cases that you really, you consider, you know, this person might be a danger to other people. But just because somebody has committed, you know, a couple trespassings or a couple shopliftings, that, you know, mm-hmm. those are cases that, of course, that's criminal activity. But I think that we would be a little bit naive to say that shoplifting or trespassing or things like that are the same in a lethality sense as domestic battery or assault, or even, you know, destruction of property, or, you know, indecent exposure, things like mm-hmm. that. Those are a little bit more.
So do you think that indecent exposure is on a higher, you're saying that you would consider that on a higher level?
I do, because I think that that indicates there's some other things happening there.
Well, that leads me to say, to ask about the mental hygiene process. Mm-hmm. So if those things are happening, if public defecation, you know, nudity, exposing yourself to children, clearly someone's not in their right mind if they're doing those things. So what about the mental hygiene process? How does that work?
Well, the mental hygiene process is something that a lot of people don't know about, and it's very useful, and it can be very useful depending on whether the mental hygiene commissioners are reading the fact patterns and really that, you know, they can call witnesses and they mm-hmm. can take into consideration exactly what's happening. You know, I've seen that those situations play out in not such a great way sometimes, but it can be a very beneficial process. It's actually codified in Chapter 27 of the West Virginia Code. And what a mental hygiene, for those people that don't know. So in West Virginia, what you can do if you have a loved one or somebody that you're close to, because you have to have knowledge that, you know, this person is behaving in a particular way that's alarming or raises concerns with you, it can be someone that's addicted mm-hmm. or somebody that's mentally ill. And you can fill out a petition. You can go type in Google. I did it today just to see how it got pulled up. But you can type in mental hygiene in West Virginia and it pulls up the forms. You can fill out the forms as an individual.
Online.
And it asks you questions. You know, of course, you have to swear to it, and you can't fill out these forms in any type of malicious way, of course, because this person, at the end of the day, if the commissioner believes that there's enough there, is involuntarily committed for a period of time for their own safety and well-being. Mm-hmm. If you believe this person is a danger to themselves, if they're, you know, threatening to hurt themselves, harm themselves, which is something that happens a lot, that's ignored because people don't feel like they can do anything. Mm-hmm. You know, you can go fill out a petition and you can potentially get your loved ones some help that way.
Can a police officer fill out a mental hygiene?
That's a good question. Yes, they can. But that kind of comes back to, they have to have this actual knowledge that something's actually going on. And I've posed this question to myself, you know, in what circumstances or situations would this be appropriate?
Would the action be appropriate?
Is yeah. Would them filling this out be appropriate? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't know what the department's mm-hmm. views of that, what any department's views of that would be. I know that it's not something that's prevented by code for mm-hmm. a police officer to do. Mm-hmm. If they, like, in a scenario where somebody would, I guess a police officer could get called back over and over again to the same situation and have actual right. knowledge that this person's not well, or, you know, threatening to hurt themselves, or, you know, in that situation, I think that would be appropriate. But in those, you know, those situations, they then take them to the hospital.
Sure.
So there's other avenues that I don't think a mental hygiene petition would necessarily be appropriate all the time for law enforcement.
So what happens after someone files a mental hygiene petition?
The commissioner reviews it. It's actually, the state is a represented party. So the mm-hmm. state is represented by the prosecuting attorney or an assistant prosecuting attorney. The person that is subject to the involuntary commitment is represented by counsel, which is often a public defender. And the commissioner then holds a hearing, and the prosecutor has to say, you know, this is the least restrictive way that we can keep this person safe. And there are also people from the hospital or whatever facility they're looking to commit that person to. And it's actually an evidentiary hearing, and it's all in code. I only had to do a couple of them. And so I'm not super intimately knowledgeable about how the process is. I would like to know a lot more, but mm-hmm. I know, I mean, it's in Chapter 27. It's very beneficial for people that feel like they don't have another option for their loved one, family member. But, you know, there are always other options as well. If you've got somebody that's threatening to harm themselves, the hospital, 911 is immediately available to you, and you can't get to the mental hygiene commissioner. Mm-hmm. You know, that's always something that has to be done first. 911 is always your first response.
And there's one mental hygiene commissioner.
I believe there are two in Kanawha County.
Okay.
I believe there are two.
So they hear all, those two hear all the cases?
Yes.
Okay.
All the cases that they grant the petitions for.
Kanawha County.
For Kanawha County.
And you feel that that is an underused a little bit?
Underused.
Or are they overworked?
You know what I mean? Like, well, I mean, I don't, I think it's just such a hard, it's such a hard job because, you know, I say it all the time. I said it right before you guys went to the break. Well, you know, the mental health crisis oftentimes converges. It you know, crashes into this, the criminal justice system. And, you know, it's sad because, you know, a lot of times I've seen loved ones really struggle with their loved one that's committing crime, or it's oftentimes, you know, very violent. And they know that they're mentally ill, but they're also very violent. So what do we do? I don't want them to go to
jail.
They're
scared.
But I'm scared, and I don't know. And so we would suggest, you know, fill out a petition, but they're also still hurting you. We got to get, you know, we can't let this go on the criminal side, but, you know, let's do the mental hygiene petitioner.
So they're both work in parallel then?
They can absolutely work in tandem. Okay, and sometimes, you know, there have been, I'm painfully aware of some very tragic situations where neither one of those avenues have been successful. Sometimes you just don't get there.
Before tragedy strikes.
And oftentimes, you know, the criminal justice system is not something that's preventative a lot. And that's what's really hard, because that's what I had to learn, right? When I first got there, or when I was young, I'm like, I want to save the world. I want to help everybody. But then I realized, you know, we really, a lot of the times, are reactive. We are, as a prosecutor, I get this stuff when terrible things have already happened.
Right.
Then I started doing domestic violence work. And I realized that really a lot of the stuff I can do is preventative. A lot of it. I can interfere meaningfully. And
let's talk about that when we come back for the third scoop. Let's talk about some preventive, you know, because preventative things that you can do as a prosecutor.
Well, I also want to hear more about the domestic violence issues that, you know, that you came across, because, you know, it's just, it's another place where the drug epidemic and the mental health crisis all converge, and it's not often out on the street.
Oh no, it's a crime that happens behind closed doors.
Yep.
We're, as prosecutors and people that are in the police force, you know, the evidence that's in the public eye is very hard to find.
Yep. All right, well, we'll be right back.
Brought to you in part by Quinn Computers. With many of us working from home, connectivity is more important than ever. Let Quinn Computers in Spring Hill take care of all your computer challenges. Computer and laptop services, all brands. Network troubleshooting and repair. Wireless network VPN installation and support. Security and firewall installation and support. Backup and recovery service, remote system administration, and more at quinntechnology.com. The Scoop Squad is also brought to you in part by Geraniums Boutique at 1011 Bridge Road, shopgeraniums.com, and by T Graphics. If you would like to make sure your voice is heard, contact Scoop Squad Truth Squad at gmail.com or find them on Facebook. If your business would like to reach out to our rapidly growing audience, contact Ron Hughes at 304-395-1111 or email ron.hughes@wvradio.com.
Welcome back to the Scoop Squad Truth Squad. Thank you for hanging out with us for a half an hour now. If you're looking at your watch and wondering...
Stop. Stop it. This is compelling stuff. Good information.
It is. It is. So I think it's good. I mean, I'm learning a ton.
Really? From me?
Yes. I do not have a law degree.
Well, I
play a lawyer on TV, but I do not have a law degree, or on the radio.
Well, I have to put it, like, I have to put a little disclaimer out there, right? Okay. So I'm 30 years old. I'm relatively young in my career. The only reason I can speak about this stuff, I'm speaking from experience. There's a lot that I don't know. And I was trained by some of the most amazing people that I still talk to that have mentored me.
Gosh, you were at the prosecutor's office for 17 years old.
And I watched people. I've made so many mistakes. I'll make so many more. And now I'm at Homeland Security, get to work with some amazing, amazing people. A lot of them are either still in law enforcement or ex-law enforcement. So I say all that, you know, I don't want to sound like I have had years and years of experience, but I mean, I've
Well, you surround yourself with smart people, right. Morgan, who are more I mean, that's what intelligent people do. They they surround themselves with the best and brightest.
If
and
I'm
they
the smartest person
them.
In the room, we're in
trouble. We're in trouble.
But
Well, girl, you haven't seen my IQ.
You might be the smartest person in this room.
I do have a lot of passion for what we're talking about. So anything that I have a question about, if I can answer it, you know, if I don't have the answer today, I'll get you the answer.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Well, I just think there's so much frustration in our community and misunderstanding in the community.
And blame.
Yeah.
Shifting.
Yeah. That I think it's important to fill in maybe some information that might people might be able to
And so maybe digest. Somebody out there listening is dealing with this right now with a loved one and needs this information.
Yes. Absolutely. So we're going to move on a little bit into domestic violence, which is, you know, before the break, we're talking about it happens very often behind closed doors. And, you know, sometimes you don't even know the couple that is maybe a couple friend, you know, of you and your significant other when they go home at night. It's just, you know, the doors close and madness happens. So.
Well, and you, Morgan, you said a lot of times in your job before the break, you said that that law mostly the prosecutor's office wasn't preventative. It just it came along after a tragic event. So, but you did mention allude to there were preventative things that you discovered that you could do as a prosecutor. What were some of those?
Well, I think it was, you know, I guess it. I realized soon into my career actually as a prosecutor that, you know, oh my gosh, I'm usually here after tragedy strikes and I'm trying to make people whole again or make them, you know, I've encountered them at the worst time in their life when something terrible's happened. And then I quickly realized when I was able to speak to domestic violence victims, I'm like, oh, you know, this is a situation that, yes, you know, this has already happened and that's why they're here with me. There's been a domestic violence situation, but this is usually a continuing cycle, this cycle
it's
of domestic
the first time.
Violence. Right. It's either not the first time, probably not the last, and I can meaningfully interfere with this process. And that's a phrase that I use all the time. I want to meaningfully interfere in
I
your life.
I love that phrase.
Yeah, I just said
meaningfully
it all the time.
Interfere. Meaningfully. That could apply
For a lot
of things.
Because I want to interfere, but I want to meaningfully interfere with your life. I
or just, even sometimes it's a short disruption.
Short disruption, right. And I want to, and you know, I used to irritate, oh my gosh, and if any magistrates are listening, I used to irritate the hell out of them because I would sit there, because oftentimes, you know, in Kanawha County, it was the caseload was ridiculous and we didn't get time to prep our cases. It was huge dockets every single day. You know, you don't get to sit with a case or call the victims or, you know, you have to go and find them in court, find a room, a place to the side, and gauge
fast,
that
work
person,
fast,
work fast, and get there, right? And it's a very sensitive, emotional situation, so you have to have some tact about it. And I would irritate them to death because I'd sit there and I'd give the victim however long they needed to tell me what they needed to tell me to get comfortable with me. And if they needed more time, they needed more time because in that moment, I'm your person. That this is it. You know,
hopeful.
They're hope. A lot of times, they're very hopeful.
You're their lifeline.
Well,
because the alternative could be really bad.
And I gave my cell phone out. You know, and I still sometimes get texts from victims. You know, I would say text me in the middle of the night, call me, whatever you need to do, because you know if you can't, I'd say call 911 first, obviously. But if there's anything that you need, I'm here. Whether it be, you know, diaper. I mean, I'm not trying to be goofy, but I mean, if this person needs something, I wanted
to make
sure.
Because you're a good human, like most of us are.
Well, because I mean, often it's like
you have a heart for people.
Yeah. Well, because you're saying to this person, I need you to cooperate and testify against this person, or you know, be here in court, which is exposing you to potential danger. Just being here with me. And I'm just going to throw you to the wolves. You know, I want you to know that you have access to me and that I can help you.
And you can trust me.
And that you can trust me and that I'm here with you. And in the more serious cases that I was, you know, able to secure cooperation from the witness, you know, I take them to my office. You can sit in my office. I'll let you know when they're gone. you know, we stayed in communication. I would text them probably, you know, six at night after work, you know, during the week. Hey, how you holding up? You're doing fine. Everything's okay. You're going to get through this. Because if you open those lines of communication with that person, they're going to trust you and mm-hmm. give, you know, and be there.
So when you talk about prevention, you talk about forming a relationship with someone.
And letting them know, because a lot, I mean, like I said, you are meaningfully interfering in that person's life. You are letting them know that, you know, through prosecution, through convictions, you can potentially keep this person away from you. Mm-hmm. Not always. And it's really hard because misdemeanor offenses are punishable by up to a year in jail. In West Virginia, we have something called day-for-day sentencing. And what that means is a judge gives you 1 year in jail. That's your sentence. You automatically reduce that by half. So you're only doing 6 months. So all misdemeanors, I want everybody to understand, all misdemeanor cases, if you were to max out and give that person, any crime, up to a year, if you give them that max jail time 1 year, they're only doing 6 months. So no matter what. So people are, oh, they let him out of jail, they let him out of jail. Well, first of all, nobody's getting sentenced to the 1 year.
Because it's a misdemeanor.
Because it's a misdemeanor. And because, I mean, to get sentenced to jail,
yeah.
I mean, it's a pretty harsh sanction or penalty. I mean, you want to... Not a lot of magistrates are going to do that in misdemeanor in magistrate court.
But domestic violence, you said, is also a misdemeanor.
Domestic violence is a misdemeanor. That's one of the most important and dangerous things that you deal with as a magistrate court prosecutor. That's what you want to pay attention to because it's often overlooked because it's a misdemeanor. But it's something that we call a stackable offense. There's a couple stackable offenses. If you get one domestic violence conviction, that's domestic violence one. Second is domestic violence two, that's another misdemeanor. And then the third domestic violence charge that you get is a felony.
Okay.
So that's a stackable offense, which is a good thing.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, if a woman is with a man and he beats the crap out of her, mm-hmm. is that considered assault or is that considered?
Battery.
Okay. So it's
physical contact battery.
Okay. So is that different than, that would be a different charge?
That's domestic battery. Domestic assault is putting you in imminent fear of harm. So I'm telling you.
Okay.
Yeah, it's you could break it down and say assault could be words or I'm putting you in fear that I'm going to do something to you.
I'm going
to
get you imminently. One day, bitch.
No, that wouldn't even be. I mean, that could be considered a something that leads up to a charge maybe, but it's got to be imminent, right?
Right.
Like I'm gonna come to your house tonight at 5 p.m. and shoot you in the head.
What if I'm gonna kill you one day?
One day would be
not
distinct enough. Yeah. Really. I mean that's hard.
Yeah.
But I mean it's in a domestic situation.
Not that anyone needs to be listening to these keywords or phrases.
No, God. Well, I mean, and that's the thing. Abusers get very familiar with how domestic violence mm-hmm. is prosecuted. And what they need to do to keep their victims out of court, off the phones with 911, it's not something that they don't understand.
As someone who was a, who was in a, a bad relationship at some point in my life, you know, my man was very, he was just real good about saying things mm-hmm. and looks
the line.
And doing things to make me feel crazy.
That's what you have to pay attention to. And what I became very passionate about. I was
just
very
hard to
passionate.
Prove. I mean, that's hard.
It's
to,
hard
it's
to prove.
It's very hard to prove, but you have to work together as a team. And that's another thing. I would always tell the men or women, you know, I'm on your team. You got to keep me informed. What I don't know is what's going to hurt us, right? Mm-hmm. You got to tell me everything. A look, a phrase, a symbol.
Yep.
And that's something I just read a book, Loser Me, on stalking from like 1990 or something. I wasn't even born. But stalking is the charge that people often correlate to how the mob was taken down. I know it's a very extreme example, but racketeering, right? That's how they finally got the mob because it's the charge that you could use all kinds of different instances mm-hmm. to get one person or a group of people. Stalking is another charge that you can use multiple instances of conduct to get an abuser. So usually domestic battery, domestic related offenses, you use one incident, you charge that one incident of conduct, and you don't look at any other incidences of conduct. But stalking, you can use several different incidences or instances of conduct and put it together in one charge, which is also a stackable offense. So you can, I actually, it's a very interesting charge to use. And stalking is a really prominent way for abusers to abuse.
Oh, mm-hmm. Sure.
For example, the looks, right? Or in one case that I read about, you know, the guy left a coffee cup in her car. To anyone else, that would be like, okay, what's the big deal? But she knew that the last time he saw her, he said he was going to do this, and that's how she would know that he found her.
Or things, it's like, well, what's the big deal? He's here, you're here. Mm-hmm. Well, the big deal is that he knows I'm here.
Right.
And it's and he's not staying away from here. If he was done with me, he'd be gone.
It's so important. And what I learned and what I developed I was so passionate about, and I still am very passionate about. And I've gotten to do some of this stuff at Homeland Security. Jeff Sandy's really good about letting me kind of suggest things and work the way that I want to work there. But just listening to people. Domestic violence is so expansive and different. Every case is different. Every fact pattern is different. Every woman and man is different. Every relationship is different. And to be able to meaningfully interfere into somebody's life and potentially save them.
You know, I love that. I'm going to put that phrase in my artillery.
It was cool.
Meaningfully interfere.
It was cool because I felt like I would go home on days that I was in magistrate court and it's a mess and it's always crazy and you're
thankless,
sweating.
I know. I know. It
but
was
I
just
felt,
a thankless job.
Oh, I would get cards from people all the time and I'm like, man, this is cool. I know that I did something good today. Right. And I know that, you know, no matter what, I did my best. I that person knows that no matter what's going on, they got somebody that cares.
Right, right.
And somebody that listens.
It's very important to have that person to believe that believes you.
That believes you. That's another thing, man.
Yeah.
I will believe you.
Yeah, it's really crazy. Just the fact that for me, it was such a big deal that people believed what I said, because anything I said, he would have a whole other public relations campaign going on that I couldn't keep up with.
And you can always develop. It's kind of amazing how quickly you're able to develop that intuition of knowing when somebody's telling the truth.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Oh, so, gosh, I think as a mom. Ooh,
If you have a perception of somebody and they do a really good job outside of keeping a perception up and inside they're a totally different person, it's hard for people to believe that someone might be capable of being violent or abusive.
Deceitful, right.
Yeah.
It's hard, but I learned to trust my gut. And that was something that my boss told me, you know, you got to trust what you think is happening. And I did, and it never steered me wrong.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah. Well, Morgan, thank you. Everybody, thank you for listening. We have come to the end of our...
Oh, man, I'm sad. And I just want to say really quickly, I'm really sorry that I gave a little false tease on Facebook today about what our podcast was going to be like.
I took the show away.
I get really emotional and excited and not angry, but just like,
I love about you.
I want everybody to know what I know, and everybody needs to know it now. And so, we are going to talk about what I promoed. We are going to talk about it.
Yeah, but we're going to talk about everybody. We aren't going to just talk about a handful of people.
Oh, sis. we'll talk. We can talk about me.
We're the talk of the town.
We can talk about me too, but... You know,
we ask you to leave the room when we talk about you? Can I do it?
We're gonna have be a week that she's not on the air, and we're gonna bring you one. We're gonna talk all about.
I'll come back.
The inner workings of Ashley.
Can we do your mama? Do your mama jokes. Gotta get some
growing up with Ashley Switzer. Our next episode, our next podcast that we produce will be called Growing Up with Ashley Switzer.
Okay.
All right.
I appreciate it. It was great. what
we got to wrap it up.
We got to wrap it up. Three Scoops with Morgan. Mm-hmm. It was great information.
Next week, we've got another show. So yeah. Listen in.
And I won't even give a teaser because who knows if they'll let me do it.
People are actually asking to come on. So there you go.
All right. And there, nobody's time was wasted. All right, Charleston. Have a good week.
Rebroadcast, retransmission, or transcription is not permissible without the expressed approval of Scoop Squad Truth Squad. Copyright 2022 Scoop Squad Truth Squad.